You're listening to Radio Freethinker. Welcome to our Scientology special.
Welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your freethinking historian.
And I'm Don, political science and philosopher.
And I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist, and I just rickrolled y'all. Today is the Scientology special, and we have a special guest in the studio with us. For over 20 years, Jerry Armstrong has been the target of persecution by the Church of Scientology. He held a number of positions in the core management of the church, including researching L. Ron Hubbard for his biography. The things he discovered and the abuse he took inside convinced him to flee. Thanks for coming into the studio today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Great to be here.
Well, this is basically part two of our episode on cults, and our special guest is an expert on Scientology. He's going to be telling us some inside information. Why don't we just give a quick basic intro. How did you get involved with the Church of Scientology?
Well, I got involved here in Vancouver in 1969, and I was lured in the same way that they lure in everybody else, with the promises of great superhuman abilities and superhuman intelligence and communication skills and powers. And so I followed that path for 12 and a half years, including into the core of the organization, close to Hubbard, and determined that the whole thing was a crock, that all the promises were false, and Hubbard himself was a pathological liar.
Wow. And you had a particularly high position in the church as well, that you had access to some very sensitive information that other members didn't have.
Right. During my final 2 years in the C organization, and that's the core group that signs contracts for a billion years of service to Scientology.
Billion years, wow.
Billion years, yeah. So I only put in the first little bit of that.
Well, that's pretty good, though.
Do you get paid for that billion years? No, sorry.
Well, during most of that time, I was paid $10 a week.
Wow. And you were working as a biographer of Hubbard and his family and his writings, and you came across that he was a pathological liar. What was the tipping point? What sort of pushed you over the edge from believer to critic?
Yeah, I wasn't the biographer. I worked with the biographer. I did the research. I was sort of the historian.
Right.
And it was an accumulation of material. There were some significant lies, such as his claim that he was a nuclear physicist, or that he'd been crippled and blinded in the war and cured himself with his mental science Dianetics. There were a number of things like that which were very significant to me. The claim that they could raise IQ a point per hour of auditing. And this is Hubbard making that claim. And by the time I left, I knew that he was not a nuclear physicist. He'd flunked out of his second year of university. He'd never been crippled or blinded in the war. And Scientology auditing, their psychotherapy, did not work. And the point per hour simply was a lie. I left Scientology just as stupid as when I got in, perhaps a little smarter because at least I was then smart enough to leave.
I know I've seen the biography they have for Scientology for L. Ron Hubbard online, and it does. It makes him seem like to be, you know, the second coming, so to speak, which I guess is the role he was trying to play. Was it true that he was the youngest Eagle Scout ever become? They had something on the website about how he got all his merit badges when he was a kid, younger than anyone else did, and
right, and he also claimed to get them all in 90 days.
Yeah.
He was an Eagle Scout. Whether or not he was the youngest, scouting denies that they keep such statistics, so they say there's no way of him or anyone knowing that. More significant than his claim of being an Eagle Scout is his claim of some 28 medals and palms earned in the military in the Second World War. The fact is, he was given 4 standard service medals that virtually every service personnel got at that time. That, to me, is a significant lie.
Well,
I have a couple of questions. I mean, based on the founder being such a liar, the beliefs of the Church of Scientology are probably kind of hokum. Could you tell us a little more about what the Church of Scientology claims it believes?
Actually, and before you, I think there are 2 levels to that. I think there's the introductory level, if I walked in off the street, what they would say to me. Because I understand that's different than when you get up to the higher echelons, they let you in on the real secrets.
That's true, but they do hold that carrot out right at the beginning if they think that you'll bite on it.
Okay.
So you do learn right away of the state of clear and the state above clear called operating thetan. They say that we are all thetans. That's their term for spiritual being. And they claim that an operating thetan is at cause over matter, energy, space, and time. So you can move that phone with your mind. You can cause it to ring with your mind. You can do virtually anything. It's a total crock.
Wow. Well, maybe we can get into some more of the methodologies of Scientology, but we have some interview material we want to air for you. Rob,
yes,
tell us a bit about that.
Last week, I interviewed some members of the Vancouver chapter of Anonymous, which is the international group of people that sort of organize anarchistically over the internet and protest the Church of Scientology. And it was actually through members of Anonymous that we got in touch with Jerry, and here is that interview for you now.
After this commercial break.
Hey, we're J+J+J, and I bet you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The sitar?
We call it that. Do you?
You should. Unless you don't like sitars.
Why protest Scientology? What got you into putting on Guy Fawkes masks going out downtown?
Well, the whole protest started with, basically, it was an internet sensation. There was a video that was released, it was of Tom Cruise, and it was him speaking of some really interesting and disturbing things about his religion, things that would not normally be approved of the public. You know, the church did not want anybody to hear these things. This was found on the internet, and it spread like wildfire all over the place. Everyone was watching this video, and the organization of Scientology had it taken down. they were taking it down left, right, and center. They were at least trying to. And the internet, or the, you know, they felt this was a complete and total suppression of free speech. And in the internet, one thing that will never, ever fly is the suppression of free speech. So
these are protests against censorship as much as against Scientology.
That's how it started. Every fire needs a spark. This was its spark. Through that, there were these giant protests all over the world in January of 2008. Through that, people started to dig deeper and actually read and learn more about what they were up against, what Scientology was, what it stood for, what its practices were, and that's where these protests grew. People started to actually hold on to this cause and get attachment to it and figure out, you know, that this is a cause worth fighting and this is something that people need to understand.
You have to understand that Scientology has a long history of suppression of free speech. It wasn't just this one video. There are innumerable videos out there, a lot of them done by a man called Mark Bunker, who's kind of revered by Anonymous as Wise Beard Man. That show...
Founded Xenu.net, I think?
Xenu TV. And there's just instance after instance after instance of Scientology trying to do the same thing they did with the Tom Cruise video, but to critics, people who've written books, people who've just thrown something out on the internet. They do it through lawyers, they do it through intimidation, they hire private investigators, they handle flyers, which is, you know, part of the reason we wear masks. We've had Scientologists steal our signs, take them right into the org in front of us. I don't know how many profanities have been leveled in your direction.
I've been harassed a number of times. At smaller raids, at smaller protests, they can be very aggressive, and we've had to deal with that on a couple of occasions.
I'm female.
Yes, I know, because I'm female. But when there's not, you know, police supervision, and thank God for the police department, because they've helped us out on numerous occasions, but when there's not police supervision and there are fewer protesters, they have been fairly aggressive, and it's good to be there with extra people, for sure.
Constantly bull baiting us, constantly.
Yeah.
Always trying to get us, you know, trying to push us so that we do something towards them that they can use against us. It never works, but, you know, it doesn't stop them from trying, you know, coming out and getting in our faces, you know, shouting profanities at us, just trying to push us over the edge, and of course, you know, it never works.
And there is a course in Scientology that a number of members of the Vancouver chapter of Scientology, or whatever you would like to call it, have taken. It's the SP and PTSP handling course, where it teaches them how to deal with enemies of Scientology like Anonymous, or people who have been at it longer than Anonymous has been around, or any person who thinks badly about Scientology. You know, they are taught how to deal with us, and that goes back to fair game, of course. Destruction of the lawsuits and the harassment, and it's
really funny that that's all that they can ever, you know, go back to is to try and harass us, or if we're not biting, they just close their blinds, lock their doors, they won't talk to us.
Because they got nothing.
Well, the thing that's really funny about this is Scientology preaches that it is a leader in communication skills, that it will teach you how to communicate and deal with people and how to handle people better than anything else.
And that they are the most ethical people on the planet.
That is one of the biggest things they promote. They promote their ethics and they promote their communication skills. I have yet to find a Scientologist on my level in communication. I can't find a Scientologist that can give me a straight answer on the what they call reaching clear.
Has anyone here ever been to a Scientologist's stress test, been through that, or
I
seen an e-meter or anything like that?
I took the stress test online that they provide. I didn't go in for the results. For the same reasons I don't walk into any cult door.
But you'll have to understand, at least for myself and a few other of Anonymous, we don't all go with masks anymore because things have happened, you know, circumstances have come up where people inside the cult, they know our faces. There's no point. So for us, I will never ever get the chance to take an e-meter stress test from a Scientologist under the guise that they think I'm just a regular Joe. They all know who I am. They know my face. There is absolutely no chance for me to ever do something like that. So,
and the knowledge is there regardless. We don't need to go in.
We have people who have been inside the cult for 20, 30, 40 years and then come out and tell us their stories. So we have plenty of people who protest with
us. We've even had people that have, you know, we've been out protesting and they just passed by on the street and they say, hey, what's this all about? And they go in and take the test and then they're told, you know, oh, you're so depressed, you should take our courses and stuff. And then they come out and they talk to us about how ridiculous the test is. And on several cases, we've actually had, you know, a few people join our cause because of it, going in there and seeing just how outlandish some of the stuff is, just, you know, just like that. And they've become, you know, a part of our group and our cause.
He means right there on the spot.
Yeah.
Like, we've had people, they'll walk by the protest, they stay for the full duration, that's hours upon hours of protesting, and then they come back. And then we see them online, so.
They used to be way more open at the York, in Vancouver at least. Like, they would have the doors open, they would have tables up back in like, you know, March or something.
Oh,
the old days of 08, they would have people set up giving stress tests in full view of Anonymous, they wouldn't shut themselves off. Now, when they hear that we're coming and they see it on the internet, because they're always watching, they have the blinds down, they have the doors closed, people hide and, you know, sneak out back doors in an effort to keep away from us and, you know, to deal with our, you know, internet terrorism.
Which begs the question, what are they hiding?
Here's the other thing. Many Anonymous and many Scientologists, even in Vancouver, will never ever see each other because, many Anonymous only come on Saturdays for our big protests that we usually do monthly. Every Saturday, many members of the org are told not to show up. They are told not to read newspapers, not to turn on the TV. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous. And they follow this. They follow this to a T. If Susan Kerr, who is one of the head operators at the Vancouver Scientology org, if she says, don't come in on Saturday, don't read the newspaper, don't turn on your TV, they won't do it.
They are so sheltered from what we know that it's right out of an Orwell novel. They are given software to load onto their computers that will screen Xenu TV, sites like Clambake, anything that OSA is aware of that might hold critical information towards their cult, which is why it's not a religion, it's a cult. They do everything a cult does. They control the minds of their parishioners through practices like auditing, practices where you have to sit and stare without blinking into another person's eyes for 2 hours. If that's not a form of some kind of hypnotism, I don't know what is. Their vicious suppression of critics. They run a prison camp called the RPF, which is short for Rehabilitation Project Force. They have their own language that sets them apart. Their nickname for people who are not Scientologists is WOGS, which implies that if you're not a Scientologist, you're something less than a Scientologist.
Considering that Scientology's crimes are so serious in nature, why are the protests of Anonymous often kind of comedic? I've watched a few online, and it's just kind of using humor.
With Vancouver, what we've always done in Vanonymous, at least I know, is we bring the music, we keep ourselves dancing, we'll bring bubbles and stuff like that. It's a little bit of a shock factor, but it's to get your attention. Would you have watched those protest videos if we're all standing there just handing out flyers? You might have checked it out for 30 seconds, then you would have gone away. However, if we're doing crazy antics while we have people who are there, you know, to give a serious vibe and, you know, to, you know, sit there, answer questions you have, handle pamphlets and stuff like that, we're there to attract attention because not a lot of people know about this stuff.
Yeah, nothing's going to turn off the general public faster than a bunch of angry people with bullhorns behind signs.
Exactly.
And it keeps, like, Scientology, the Scientologists that we have to deal with, they don't know how to go out and say, you can't dance, you know? They don't know how to deal with people having fun. We're looking at it as a, you know, we're having a good time, and we're, you know, while we're educating the public, but they can't do much about people who are just there enjoying themselves, maybe dancing, maybe having a little laugh. They can't do much about it.
A lot of
the cops will come by, and the cops say, you know, because they frequently call the cops on us, and the cops can't deal with people who are just there dancing on public property. And it would be a lot different, and it would hurt our credibility if we were, you know, aggressive or overly serious or acted as, you know, other activist groups might, you know.
Gotta have the walls.
We
had one incident where we had police in a car watching us from across the street in their cruiser, and feeling a little bit cheeky, I decided to put on full blast the theme to Cops. And by the end of the song, we've got their hands out of the car, you know, and they're going to it. So
on your side.
Well, I mean, if you know, the officers of the Vancouver Police Department, they know us well at this time. We have a good relationship with these people. We have had Scientologists come by and steal our picket signs and harass us, and the police have shown up. They have gone into the org, got our signs back, you know, made sure that they're not there to make sure that we're abiding the law anymore. They're there to make sure that Scientology is abiding the law. And the fact that we have that relationship with the Vancouver Police Department, that they've seen, you know, that we are not out there to cause problems, you know, I think it's a great feeling. And it starts to build a reputation in the city. And if people know us, and, you know, they know that we're there for, you know, like Vegan said, we're there to educate the public, we're there for a good time. Mm-hmm. We're not there to attack individual Scientologists. We're not there to harass them because of their beliefs. We're there to educate people who don't know, because those are the people, at least in my eyes, those are the people who are potential targets for the church. So everybody who didn't know about it, listened to what we have to say, now knows about it, well, that's money that Scientology can never obtain. And remember, that's Scientology's goal, is financial control, because through financial control, you can have control.
I should point out, too, that the names we drop we're putting out a lot of facts without really giving a lot of sources.
We encourage all our listeners to look up these sources themselves.
Yeah, please, because you'll find exactly what we found. Look up Fair Game, look up Operation Snow White, look up Operation Freakout, look up Google Scientology Schizophrenia.
A good place to start is ZNU.TV.
Yeah.
Actually, a great place to start if you want to know everything that we're about locally is you can go to www.vanonymous.org. That's simply anonymous.org with a V in front of it. And you can check out everything there. And if you want to get involved, you can also check out whyweprotest.net.
All right. This interview has been running almost 45 minutes, so if I can get your final thoughts.
Pro tip, if you want to start a successful cult, don't piss off the internet.
Now's the time for Age of Humans. Care for what can be done for yourself.
Promoting their latest album in the ever-expanding universe, the Biltmore Cabaret and the Georgia Strait present Canadian band The Most Serene Republic with Seattle's Grand Archives. They're playing the Biltmore Cabaret on Saturday, September 26th. Doors at 7, show at 8:30. Tickets are on sale now.
And we're back on Radio Freethinker.
So just to clarify, the interview was almost 50 minutes of footage. I will be putting the full thing up on our new website, radiofreethinker.com. Please go check it out. I didn't introduce any of them. They decided to remain anonymous.
Hence the name, Van Anonymous.
He said one thing just to start off, getting back to our guest here. And I was talking to you before. He mentioned that money's a big thing with Scientology. When you joined Scientology back in the 60s, were you rich, or how did that work for you in getting involved in the group?
No, I was logging here on the West Coast at that time. And I had a few bucks, and I plunked that down for the basic communication course and then the course that follows that, and I bought some auditing. But I didn't have the kind of money that Scientology required to get to CLEAR or to get to OT.
What's CLEAR and OT?
Well, CLEAR, those are what Scientology claims are states that are available to people if you follow Scientology procedures. And I mentioned earlier, you become at cause over matter, energy, space, and time.
For a small fee.
Right, that's what they claim. It's garbage, and people pay up to $500,000 to buy their way up to that level of enlightenment or that level of power.
You were saying earlier that Scientologists actually consider themselves a separate species. They're not Homo sapiens. What was the term?
Right. They use the term Homo novus, sorry, or Homo Scientologicus. So they really claim that this is a separate being, a higher evolutionary person or being, and completely different from Homo sapiens. In fact, Hubbard uses the term for Homo sapiens, Homo sap, meaning that they're morons. And he also calls us, because I'm one of those people now, a Homo sapien, wogs, which is
a very offensive term. If you happen to be of East Indian origin, it's equivalent to the N-word, but for the East Indians, right?
Right, exactly, and it's also a racist term in Scientology.
You said that he came across that when in the 50s or something?
Right, my research shows that he picked it up when he was in the UK in 1952. And in the UK, the term wog is offensive and racist, like nigger is here. And he picked it up, perhaps without knowing what he was saying, but began to refer to non-Scientologists, to human beings or Homo sapiens, as wogs, and it's stuck ever since. That's what Scientologists call us.
So you found out about Scientologist arrogance, their, you know, harassment, their lies, and you decided that you had to speak out and be a critic. And then you were sent to the RPF. Could you tell us about that?
Well, that wasn't really the sequence. I was assigned to the RPF twice, and twice by L. Ron Hubbard himself.
And what's the RPF?
That's the Rehabilitation Project Force, and it's Scientology's internal prison system. I was assigned the first time, and that was for 17 months, because I got in an argument with Hubbard's wife's secretary, who was being very witchy, and I called her very witchy, and that was enough to get me 17 months in the slammer. The second time, this was for 8 months, was because Hubbard thought that I was joking about his movie making. I wasn't joking, but he believed that I was, and so therefore I was assigned to the RPF. And it really is a penal institution. It's punishment. Scientology says that it's voluntary, but that's more garbage. It was created by Hubbard to break the will of anyone he thought was opposing him, standing up to him in some way.
That's actually one of the main hallmarks of a cult, right, is to break down people's resistance, to remold their minds. And I guess the RFT would be for those people who've lapsed.
Right, the RPF.
So what happened after you left the cult? Did the harassment stop? Once you were left, were you free and clear?
No, that's when the actual harassment began. So it's been going on 28 years of harassment from the organization, which includes physical assaults, threats on my life, running into me bodily with a car, suing me 6 times, driving me into bankruptcy, a mass of what they call black propaganda, which is Scientology's way of destroying a person's reputation and relationships and livelihood. and they've run intelligence ops on me incessantly. And they had an intelligence operative came right up into Chilliwack and leased a building across the street from where my wife and I lived at the time, and they spent like 18 months there spying on us and trying to inveigle us into some kind of a scheme.
You have most of this documented on your website?
Yeah, jerryarmstrong.org.
All right. If all listeners would find out more about Scientology and Jerry Armstrong, you can go to his website, jerryarmstrong.org. You can find out about Venonymous, the local Anonymous chapter at venonymous.org.
And you can find out about Radio Free Thinker at radiofreethinker.com.
Please go check out our new website and tell us what you think at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
Well, we're right out of time, so this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob saying thank you very much to Jerry for coming in today. And to